I'm a shot in the dark, wary sort of spark. I'm a light that's too bright for me to see.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, kids, how's it going today? This is episode... 248 is a, I never know. I should always look that up before I go on the air. Sneaking up on 250, somewhere less than 250, but over 245. It's Monday, man. I'm telling you what. So, yeah, I had a rough awakening this morning. Well, I had my second awakening was rough. My first awakening was kind of rough. So I got a really good night's sleep. I was kind of up and down a couple times in the night, but when I looked at my software, I was kind of like, you know, just like waking up and being up for 15 minutes or so. And then I was like back into the pit. Like, so the sleep that I got was crazy deep sleep. I just, you know, I kind of woke up a couple of times, it seems like, and I was just having like the worst dreams. It wasn't like, I kept dreaming about some idea that I had of something that Donald Trump could do about the border other than building a wall, that it would involve giving ranches away to returning veterans that are like made out of the land right on the border, and they could have a free place, and then they just by their natural instinct of protecting their own land, they would protect the border. That was, and I kept thinking up that idea over and over again last night. I don't know. I think it's because of my work in Flint, Michigan, that I'm doing with so many strategic ideas about how to kind of provide employment for people and create community in the process or something. I don't know what's been going on. I've been thinking so strategically and innovatively here lately with this consulting stuff that I'm literally like in my nightmares, I'm dreaming about Trump in my nightmares, which I think a lot of people in America probably are. But then I'm coming up with solutions for Trump, you know? So there you go. President-elect Trump, if you're listening, buy all the land along the border, break it up into ranches, and then give them to returning vets from Afghanistan and Iraq. And then just, you know, let them build their own fence and let them protect their land. I mean, come on, these guys are like soldiers. Of course they'll do that. Problem solved. Yeah, there you go. See, now if this happens, I'll be considered a prophet. But this is what I was dreaming about last night. All the details around how would that work? You know, why would that, you know, I don't know. I woke up, I literally like read something else for a while to try to get this thing out of my head, and it didn't want to work. So I woke up after a good night's sleep, but just like on the bottom of like the deepest part of a sleep cycle. So I was kind of ripped out of the grave, you know? So I decided that I had plenty of time to get everything done that I needed. So I reset my alarm clock and I was going to go down for an hour. Right. So I go down and I am like in deep, deep, deep sleep. And I wake up just like out of a nightmare about being suffocated. Like I'm having a horrible nightmare about how I am like, I can't breathe. Someone's got their hand or something over my mouth or something. And I'm like, I'm trying to breathe. And it felt like something was sucking the air out of me. Like, I mean, I was like freaking out. Like picture of someone, like instead of doing CPR and blowing in, if they put their mouth on yours and they were, or your nose, and they were like sucking air out of you, you know, that's what was going on in this dream, right? That's how it felt. And I woke up and the power had gone off and I have sleep apnea. And so I, when you go from power to no power and you have sleep apnea, you have an apparatus covering your face, your nose, or where you're breathing from. And I have a heated humidifier on my APAP machine. And so when that turns off and it stops pumping that warm air into that hose cools off pretty quickly and it actually creates a mild vacuum. So I literally was having the breath sucked out of me, you know, and I woke up just like ripping this thing off my face and like, you know, what in the world? And I realized that it was really quiet in my room when I had two sources of white noise going before. And I'm like, oh, hey, wait a minute. I bet you it is. Oh, look, Leo Brown is calling me. Hi, Leo. I can't talk to you right now. I'm recording the counter position. shout out to Leo Brown, the founder of Breadbox Media, trying to call me on the phone. So that's how I started the day. And it just kind of went like that. So I went downstairs, tried to make some coffee. No big deal. I got gas stove. And I have a hand grinder is what I use anyway, and a battery-operated little scale for the way I brew pour-overs. No big, right? I got it. Water still works, everything. But the stove, like the little sparker on the stove was out because it's electric, and I couldn't find a lighter or matches anywhere. I was like tearing up the house, looking all over, trying to find a barbecue torch, a cigarette lighter, some matches, something in this house. I'm like, come on, man. We own candles. There's everyone who lives here smokes cigars or pipes sometimes. And I like, there's got to be a lighter around. I finally found one in my room. And so I was able to make some coffee. And then I was sitting there. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to embrace this, right? I'm going to embrace this. I'm like, the power's out. Wi-Fi's down. I can't do the emails that I wanted to do this morning. I mean, I could have maybe composed them in a document and then just kind of cut and pasted all of them. But I'm like, you know what? I'm going to embrace this. I'm going to make some coffee, hang out. And I look down and The Art of the Commonplace by Wendell Berry was sitting there. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to read Wendell Berry in a house with no power on, drinking a cup of coffee on a quiet Monday morning. I don't have to do anything until, you know, about 11 o'clock. You know, I'm just going to read a little bit this morning, take a nice slow Monday. This is going to be great. I'm embracing no power, right? I'm going to embrace being analog this morning. And after, you know, a couple of being distracted by my phone or something, and then it dawned on me, oh, wait a minute. I've never opened my garage door without power. I'm sure there's some kind of like little thing, little trigger you can pull or something or whatever, but I've never done that. And I have to pick up some stuff and deliver it for an event today at a certain time. And I'm not altogether sure that my car isn't locked in the garage without being, I assumed there was some way. I've just never had to do so, right? So long story short, I got people on the phone and arranged for, spent all this time arranging for someone to go pick up the stuff that I needed to go pick up just in case. And then right when I got that all done, the power came back on. So my nice slow morning of reading coffee that I boiled water over fire and reading Wendell Berry turned into panicking over to-do lists and then playing catch up on the email. And I don't know, man, I don't know what's going on, but I was in a horrible mood today and I was kind of cross with a vendor that I was picking stuff up with because I got there and there was nothing to carry all these little catering boxes in and they normally put them in crates and I was kind of a jerk about it, I admit it. And I was just in a bad mood. I was just like, when you wake up being suffocated and then have no power in your house, it's really getting very Monday up in here, you know? And so then I don't know if it's cause it's Monday combined with like super moon at the same time, but man, people are just on tilt. God, people are just driving like absolute morons on the highway today. And just everything that, oh, man, it's just been one thing after another. I'm just like, gosh. So I'm in a mood. I even went to confession. And I'm just like, I don't think anything of this is mortal, but I was just a real jerk to someone. And I've just was a jerk in my head to everybody on the highway. And I'm just not in a great mood. And I kind of hate the world right now. It's like, I just thought maybe the sacrament could reset it. You know, it's working a little bit. So, so this weekend recap here, Monday show, as is my tradition. What did I do this weekend? Friday, I was off and I, I did some work at home, but then I went and saw, I went into like a kind of a late afternoon movie by myself. Now, one thing, I love going to movies by myself. A lot of people are like, oh, I can never go see a movie by myself. I could never go sit in some theater by myself. But I call me a loner, call me a misanthrope, whatever, call me what you want. I love going to the movies by myself. I love just going, get my ticket, go in the dark, find like a spot where no one's around. Just put my feet up, kind of get all comfy and just hunker down and just, because I will talk to you if I'm with you. If I'm with you, I'm an ENFP, man. And if I'm with you, I will talk to you, or I will be consciously not talking to you about what's going on the screen. So if I really want to just get lost in a movie and think about what's going on, or I have to go by myself. And the movie I went and saw was Arrival. I knew this was kind of a think piece and there was going to be some interesting themes in it. So I just purposely went by myself. I put on Facebook, hey, I'm going to go see Arrival if anybody wants to go. No one responded. I was secretly thankful. So I went to a movie by myself. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about this movie later on. I've got some thoughts on it. So this is the first of warnings on spoiler alert for Arrival if you haven't seen it yet. And when we get back from the break, I'm going to finish up a couple things happened over the weekend. A new recipe that I want to talk about, and something happened on TV that I was just thought was idiotic and it ticked me off, so I'm going to rant about it a little bit. So all right, so let's head off to the break, and we'll pick it up when we get back. You're listening to The Counterposition. I am your host, Andrew Whaley. See you on the other side.
I'm a sacred word to mutter. Ran too fast and turned to butter. I'm a bit too much for me to chew.
If you enjoy listening to Andrew Whaley on The Counterposition, you should become a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you.
I'm a skip across the pond. I'm an ocean on and on. I'm a fish with no bowl that I outgrew. Lift my blood. See, only one on track.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Redbox Media. All right, so I went and saw a movie on Friday. Then on Saturday, I had a reunion. So there was there's a small amount of us, not compared to other Catholic colleges like Steubenville or Benedictine, even Christendom. There's very few of us Thomas Aquinas College alumni in the Denver metro area. I mean, maybe 35, 40 of us total. And we had a little first kind of like semi-annual or whatever gathering of everybody. And so it was interesting meeting some people that I've never met before, and people I went to school with, their parents had moved here at some point, you know. So, and then I ran into a couple of old friends and talked about stuff. And one thing, and so I'm going to kind of leave that, because I'm going to do kind of a little segment, part of a segment about some ideas that I had from a conversation I had with my friend Greg Funstein. So shout out to Greg Funstein. But yeah, so that's what I did on Saturday. And then, so I got home and so I was flipping through the channels, and sure enough, SNL had Dave Chappelle hosting. And I was a big fan of the Chappelle Show. I thought it was amazing. And I liked, and I love SNL. I mean, I've been kind of with it throughout the years. It gets better and then it's bad, then it's amazing again and back and forth, you know? And I thought, man, Dave, and A Tribe Called Quest, the return of A Tribe Called Quest without Five Dog was the musical guest. And I'm like, oh my gosh, Tribe's back. So I'm like, okay. So I'm like, cool. I'm going to do this. I'm going to watch SNL. So I saw it, they call it Saturday Live, and I guess it is live on the East Coast, but I saw people kind of mentioning stuff on Facebook, like, you know, no, that's not okay, bad start and stuff like that. And I'm like, what? So when it came around to come on, so Kate McKinnon comes out. She's clearly in her, her costume when she's doing Hillary Clinton. And they open the show with her at a piano playing Hallelujah, Hallelujah by Leonard Cohen. Now, Leonard Cohen, one of the greatest songwriters in the history of the world, 81, 82 years old, just died a few days ago. A great loss to the world. What an amazing songwriter. Leonard Cohen is an incredible songwriter. And his most famous song possibly would be Hallelujah. And so Kate McKinnon, dressed as Hillary Clinton, plays Hallelujah, like, you know, kind of in character, but not really. Just, I don't know what she, I mean, I guess she might have been in character. I don't know what she would normally sound like singing, but she's playing Hallelujah as Hillary Clinton. And then she gets, you know, and she gets done and she says something like, you know, I'm not giving up. I don't want you to either, or something like that. Like some big statement or something. And I was just like, you know what? This is not okay. I mean, it's not because I can't stand Hillary Clinton, which I can't. I'm a giant fan of Kate McKinnon. I think she's hilarious. I think she's an incredible comedic actress. But to use for one side or the other, I don't care if it's the liberal side or the conservative side, but to use the death of one of the most amazing songwriters in history for kind of a cheap political bit, or to kind of get a barb in, or to kind of even just even be left-wing politically inspiring or whatever they thought they were doing. And a couple of my friends, I put it on Facebook, I'm like, you know what, I'm hard to offend, and that offended me. I just thought that was just not okay. And a couple of my friends that are on the left were like, well, I thought it was kind of inspiring, or I thought it was good or something. I'm just, maybe I've gotten to the point where I think politics is just cheap no matter what right now, and no matter whose side you're on. And it just seemed almost like blasphemous or something. Beauty and art is something so incredibly holy to me. And especially that painful, beautiful truth that a great songwriter can bring. You know, I just saw David Ramirez live here in Denver, and he was just heartbreakingly amazing. And, you know, my friend Perry West's new record just came out. He's an incredible songwriter that's like just really channels so much beauty and pain and tragedy in the human condition. If you haven't heard that yet, go to perrywestmusic.com, click on the links, and go buy a copy of Half Glass Full. I mean, just such an incredible songwriter. And it's like, for me, that's something sacred. Poetry, lyric like that is something sacred. And to cheapen it by using it is what, you know, someone corrected me that it wasn't a gag. It wasn't a gag. It was a bit, you know, it had a punchline and she was in character. I just didn't think that was cool. I just didn't think it was cool at all. So, maybe I'm overreacting, but I just thought it was cheap. So badly done, SNL. Now, I thought Dave Chappelle was great. I thought that he was absolutely hilarious. He was talking about how in his monologue, he was saying that all of his black friends are like, you know, I mean, that's it. I'm leaving the country now that Trump's president. You want to go with us? He's like, no, you know, I'm going to stay and check out this tax break for a while. He's like, I'm one of the strangest things you're going to find. I'm a rich black guy, you know? He's like, I got this money 8 years ago, and right when I got kind of made it, Barack Obama came in and just raised taxes and stuff. I'm like, come on, man, I just got this. He's like, so Chappelle's always been kind of a guy that, I mean, he'll say it like it is and talk about it from both sides, and he doesn't let anybody off the hook. And I thought it was pretty funny. He was like, you know, I'm a rich guy. I'm going to give his tax cut a break, see what happens. You know, he's like, he was like, he took a lot of shots at Trump too, but he took a lot of, he took, I think maybe harder and more shots at Hillary Clinton. So I thought Chappelle did a great job hosting. And there was a couple of just amazing, that there was a skit you can look up on YouTube of a bunch of rich white liberal, a bunch of white liberals watching the election results, and he's kind of their token black friend there, and he's just like looking at them like they're nuts because they're surprised at what's going on. And then Chris Rock comes over and everybody claps because they didn't know Chris Rock does a cameo, and they're just like commenting and ripping on these people and just like mocking them the whole time. It was a pretty insightful, pretty funny sketch. I didn't completely agree with all the things that it implied, but it is pretty. It was a good show. But so I overall, A Tribe Called Quest, by the way, is like on top of their game. It was so good. It was amazing seeing those guys back, man. So overall, good. Opening bit, not so much. Yeah, that's been the Saturday Night Live review. Don't know if I've ever did talked about Saturday Night Live on the show. So Sunday, went to Divine Liturgy, hung out afterwards, had a great conversation. Young seminarian from Gallup. Shout out to Father Josh Mayer from the Gallup Archdiocese. I think it's his first, he's a vocations director down there. He's the first seminarian he sent up. I can't remember the guy's name, but John Smith, maybe, I think, or I don't, can't remember what the guy's name is. So anyway, no, wait a minute, that was from a show. John Smith was from a show that I saw. Never mind. I knew the same day. The character, not the person I'm at. This is how ADD I am today. But just had a great conversation about theology with this young seminarian kid, and just realized how much I love kind of not teaching, but kind of having an exploratory conversation where you're sharing some wisdom that you've attained about some ideas in theology and how they play out beyond just being concepts and whatnot. So that was a good time. Enjoyed that, hanging out outside of Holy Protection with some of my favorite people. Zena, the Disney princess, was there, as was the Sarah, the quitter, Stacy. They were both there. Shout out to both of you guys. So that afternoon, I found this, I don't know where I got it, like Facebook or something. I got this new, recipe that I saw, and of course I screwed with it and didn't do it exactly like they said to, but it was for a caramelized onion and spaghetti squash casserole. And I like the idea of spaghetti squash. It's kind of got a texture kind of like pasta. Every time I've tried to cook it and then dress it like pasta when I was paleo, I'd rather just eat something else, you know? So I'm like, okay, this sounds pretty good. I think I can make it. So, of course I was like, well, this could be an entree. This could be something I could eat for lunch if it had some meat in it. So I browned up a couple of pounds of grass-fed beef I had in the freezer, and you caramelize a bunch of onions and mushrooms, and you bake the spaghetti squash, right? And then you put this stuff together in a pan. You put a few eggs whipped into it, a can of pasta sauce, or like, you know, tomato sauce, you know, and just salt, pepper, garlic powder. There wasn't nothing special to it other than that, you know, and you know, a little bit of olive oil in the pan, and you stir it all up and you bake it until it's got a nice crust on top of it. And my goodness, was it good. It was like, it had no dairy in it at all, but it tasted like Italian pasta that had like Parmesan and like mozzarella in it. It was like so good. It's going to be one of my new go-to kind of templates for paleo stuff. You can make a stuffing out of this. I'm going to put the recipe on the show notes. So, yeah. All right. Well, let's go back to the break and we'll get onto something a little more meaty when we get back. You're listening to The Counterposition. I am your host, Andrew Whaley.
Then how we crave a hanging in its dark.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
People singing, please don't sting. please don't go.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Redbox Media. All right, so get a little politic, a little politics out of the way. Excuse me. It seems like Trump is already walking back a lot of his extreme positions, which we knew he was going to do. He's already said that Obergefell and gay marriage is settled law. So he's continuing his very, very unreported, untelevised support of LGBTQ stuff. Everyone's acting like, you know, I see these LGBTQ people on TV saying that they feel like they're not safe now. And maybe they might not be safe because the people that are like voting for Trump are emboldened or whatever, but it's like Trump is, I'm surprised that so many evangelicals have just like kind of overlooked the fact that he's been like flag wavingly supportive of like gay marriage and stuff. And, but he said that abortion was not settled law. Made a few appointments. A couple of them seem to be pretty solid, pretty normal, kind of like showing some real prudence. The guy that he made like his chief advisor, the guy from Breitbart, I'm like, what are you thinking? Oh man, I'm already seeing them like just showing articles by this guy and from his site and saying, here's who the advisor is. And it's just like one crazy thing after another. I'm like, that was just a bad move. But he's already saying that parts of the wall could be a fence. I think that's what got me on this dreaming thing that I had, was picturing these fences out in the desert in the southern U.S. or something, walls and fences, and I was dreaming about that crazy ranch idea. So maybe it's not crazy. Maybe we should do that. And then you'll know you heard it here first. I just want some credit in the history books for that idea, if that's what they do. As long as it doesn't go really bad, then I don't want it to be named after me then. So it seems like he's kind of already starting to show the signs that, okay, he's going to put some people in place. If we can get the right people in place around him. Now if someone started advising him on some of these appointments, I mean, he's doing okay with some of them. Then he might actually rule way. It's looking like he's going to rule way saner. A lot of people said this, that he was just, a lot of what he was saying was whipping up the base with his kind of experience from reality TV and all this, and that when he ruled, he was going to rule more from the center. And he's already kind of walking back a lot of stuff. And so, and that being said, I am still just absolutely shocked. The more I watch, I just haven't watched much news. But every time I turn on the news, or I see articles people are linking on Facebook or something, it's like I'm still shocked at how shocked the left is that Trump won. I just made me realize that people on the coasts and people in the big cities are just absolutely oblivious to the fact that there's this ocean of working class white people who are trying so hard to make a living and to keep a roof over their head and not lose the house and keep the kids in school and all that stuff. And, you know, they lost their factory job, or they're, you know, they're in a skilled trade and their wages are going down because they're competing with illegal crews or something. And they just, and then at the same time, they're just being told right and left that you have white privilege. You're privileged. If you need money, why don't you just go down to the bank and just ask for some? You're white, they'll give it to you. I mean, that's what they hear, right? And these people at the same time are like trying not to lose the house. And the fact that they did not see any kind of a backlash coming from the working class of flyover country, especially out in the Rust Belt, amazes me, because I am not that politically astute. And I saw it coming. So I don't know. If I saw it coming, I have to think it was fairly obvious, because I'm not a political animal. I don't really think on that level. I don't play on that level. I don't pay attention that much. And I saw it coming a month and a half ago. And I just don't, I'm amazed that they're that shocked. I think that we have a lot of divides in this country, but I think it's, the working class and the kind of the moneyed kind of like intellectual class is one of the bigger divides we have, maybe bigger than race or creed or anything. And I'm in a weird position, right? Because I'm a consultant and I make money for largely ideas and plans and stuff. And I do a show and I'm, you know, I read books and, you know, I got a degree in great books and I talk about philosophy and all this, but I'm from a really working class background. Like, I think I'm the only person in my family to get a BA. I think maybe someone had an associate's degree in something, but I think I'm the first person to go to college and get a full BA or a BS in something, you know? I'm from a town full of working class people and a family full of working class people. And it's, maybe that's why I can see what's going on and I'm not shocked, but it's an interesting thing. But anyway, so I want to switch to talking about, I want to talk about this movie Arrival a little bit. So spoiler alert, I want to talk about Arrival. I'm going to put spoiler alert, Arrival, spoiler alerts in the title. And this isn't like it's a sci-fi film, but it's not like it's a superhero film. So it's not like the kind of film that a bunch of fanboys are going to get ticked off because I let out spoilers or something. I mean, pretty much the movie plays out along the lines of the trailer, you know, but but the think piece side of it was really, really interesting. So this movie it's pretty fascinating. So you see this opening scene, it's kind of a montage, a historical narrative sequence of Amy Adams' character, who is I can't tell what she would call her, maybe a philologist. She's a languages expert. And she has a little girl and she grows up and she ends up getting sick and dying of cancer, looks like, right? And that's like in the opening scene you see. And so you think they're just kind of setting her up as the aftermath, telling you where she's been. And now you see her alone at her desk doing her thing. And you're like, okay, this is a woman who, she comes walking into a classroom to teach, right? And you're thinking, okay, here she is. She's teaching. She's lost her child. And that's kind of setting the stage, right? And it's fascinating because she's just teaching. And then everyone's emergency kind of like triggers on their phones are going off. And everyone's looking at their computers and not listening to her lecture. And finally, she's saying, hey, guys, can you pay attention? And finally, someone says, hey, can you turn the TV onto a news channel? And what you see is 12 giant kind of bean-shaped ships have stopped, 30, 40 feet just above the ground, hovering all over the world. And so basically aliens have arrived. And it's amazing because it was played out so much more like it was a drama. It was sci-fi, but it was sci-fi drama. It was really more about the experience of these people and about the experience of cultures and stuff. And about the nature of language and it's pretty fascinating. But so in the context of this movie, they end up recruiting this woman and she has to go into this one ship. And it seems like you kind of find out that in each of these places, they've opened up a door and people are coming in and trying to talk to the aliens. And you find out who they are and kind of like trying to learn their language and talk with them and get some kind of communication going. Right. Well, in the long run, the only thing that I want to talk about is, so these aliens are, they call them heptapods. We have seven legs and they're kind of like squid looking things that you can see. And they end up figuring out that she writes on a board and they can shoot this ink out and write, and it's like a circle, and they respond. And so they're learning each other's language through this process. Right. And she ends up figuring out that their language is circular because there's no beginning and no end. And they speculate that that might be because there's no forward and backward for them because they're kind of round. And they start talking about how, and they're figuring out how they write. And they figure, oh, their language is pictorial. It doesn't correspond to what the sounds that they're making. And they keep figuring these things out. And then they figure out that these people, these aliens are, they write the way they do. They speak the way they do. They think the way they do because they have kind of a different relationship to time than we do. And what was really interesting is that she made this statement. They made reference to a theory that if you can like really immerse yourself in someone's language and learn to speak in their language and think in their language and live in their language, that you can kind of become, you can kind of start thinking like them. And they went through this process of, and so she learned their language and they basically gave her this gift of like basically being able to see the future, but they gave it to her by teaching them in teaching her in detail, like just downloading to her, like their entire language. And they brought her into the ship and she breathed this air they're kind of floating around in and stuff. And then she could like read everything. And then she could basically, kind of see the future and kind of see time from a non-linear perspective. And it turns out the reason that they wrote that way is they're like non-linear creatures in a sense. So that got me thinking about some stuff. And when we get back from the break, I want to explore some of those ideas a little bit and how that might relate to the modern political climate, cultural climate. So you're listening to The Counterposition. I am your host, Andrew Whaley.
Then all the color glass, that painter's palette smash, all the colors of my soul.
If you enjoy listening to Andrew Whaley on The Counterposition, you should become a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you.
I'm a hyena laughing fool. I'm a hero without anyone to save. Love decked myself in toys. I'm a poor and kingly boy. Oh, I'm lovely, and I'm dumb.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Redbox Media. All right, final lap. We're talking about the movie Arrival, new Amy Adams movie. Is it Jeremy Renner is also in it. Really solid. And what's that? Forrest Whitaker, I think, is the military guy in it. Really great acting. I thought it was a spectacular film. In fact, I'm going to go back and see it again. It's worth seeing on the big screen too. I don't go see everything on the big screen. This is, it's not super giant explosions and crazy CGI, but there's definitely some of that in there. Some CGI, but they have it really dialed down for realism. And it's slow moving CGI. It's not like crazy off the chart explosion. Like I went and saw Doctor Strange last weekend and with some friends, and man, I mean, some of the stuff they did was just like watching like a Marvel. It was a Marvel film. It was like watching one of these superhero films where it's like, but it was like watching The Matrix or Inception or something. Just crazy, crazy special effects. But so this was really well done special effects, maybe even better, because they were taking something that was completely otherworldly and showing you in a way that it looked pretty real. So, anyway, so we're talking about Arrival, and so the core premise of the film, once again, spoiler alert if you're just coming in, I'm talking about a movie that's out right now. So the core premise is these aliens show up, this languages expert, this philologist or whatever you want to call her, has to, is brought in by the military to try to learn their language, and it seems like this is going on in every one of them around the world, and it's pretty interesting because there's geopolitical stuff and how they're reacting to the everything. And there's a whole plot line, but I'm not even going to talk about the plot line. There's a really nice twist at the end of the movie. I'm not even going to give that away or talk about it. But I do want to talk about they are going and repeatedly meeting with these aliens. And she's thinking through, like at one point she diagrams a sentence and shows the question that they want to ask is like, you know, what is your purpose for coming here? Or what is your purpose on Earth? And she shows them why she's doing these vocabularies and why she's doing this and why she breaks it down, diagrams a sentence and talks about it philosophically and why you have to establish the concept of this and see if they see this in this way, if they think causally, if they do this and they do that. And it's pretty fascinating. It just really broke down the idea that there is a supple kind of relationship between philosophy and language. And anytime you open your mouth and use words, in some way you're doing philosophy. If I say the cow sat by the wall, then I'm saying that there is a cow. There's such thing as a cow. And it's something different than a wall. But they're not the same thing. And that this cow was the kind of thing that can be in different states, and sitting is one of those things. And it happened in the past. So it was in a, I can speak about something that has occurred. And so, I mean, there's all these implications in a very, 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 very simple sentence. Like, what is your purpose here? And so she breaks all that down, and they go to all this trouble to like understand. So they're built so differently. Their language is indiscernible. It's just a bunch of growls and grunts and moans, kind of like a cross between like, you know, scary alien sounds with like whale moaning or something like that. And so I'm so tempted to tell the Peter Zalasko whale joke on the air right now. I don't have time. So remind me by email or something. Shout out to Peter Zalasko. I want to tell the Peter Zalasko whale joke at some point. I want to make sure I have it right first. But what was really interesting is they're trying to use, to understand the way they write, how they communicate, take that back to how they think, and even understand what that means about their experience of the world based on who they are. You know, if you're floating all the time, or kind of like, you know, scuttling about, and you have seven legs and you can't really figure out if there's any eyes facing any way, then there's no forward or backward or something. So you're not going to write from left to right. In fact, they're constantly going in like some kind of circle. So their writing is in a circle, and you have to figure out. And it's just really, and they write by shooting ink out onto a surface like a squid does. And so it goes through this air, and then they can kind of manipulate it somehow in from a distance, and it solidifies into like this smoke ring looking thing with these kind of barbs coming out of it, and then it dissipates after. And they're taking pictures of this, and they're learning their language, right? But they had to figure all this out. And it just got me thinking about a project I've had in the back of my mind for a long time, where we would have like a series of interviews and dialogues where you would just talk to someone about an issue, and then instead of going forward and trying to come to conclusions, you would go backwards. And you'd say, so can you know something? And we start talking about abortion, and then they'd make some statement, and I'm like, and then we would talk about, you know, well, wait a minute, what would it mean for this thing to be a human life? Can we know what would it mean for it to be human? What would it mean for it to be alive? And then we end up pulling back, saying, what does it mean to predicate something of something else? How can I say A is B? This is human. Does A is B always mean the same thing? Or can we know what something is? How do we know what something, can we actually know something? You know, and kind of pull back and try to figure out where the fundamental disagreements are, which maybe don't have any kind of like morality or kind of any like chosen worldview attached to it. And I've had conversations like this with people, usually across coffee bars when it was slow in the afternoons, you know, and I've noticed that you can really get to something. And so that got me thinking about when I read the book, The Sparrow, they were talking about learning the language of these two different species that were on this new planet they were on. And I had the same ideas and the same experience watching Arrival that I had when I was reading about that in The Sparrow and them coming to understand that. And it's interesting. I think that we might want to start using some of these tools that missionaries had when they would like encounter a completely different culture, tools that you would use to try to learn a completely new language from scratch, tools that you would use to, if you were coming into an interface with something very, very foreign, and use those tools to understand each other a little bit. I think that'd be really, really worthwhile. It seems pretty interesting to me that we would kind of use those in our own culture, because sometimes whenever I'm talking to someone about something and we're talking about business, or we're talking about race, or we're talking about, you know, politics, or we're talking about religion, we're talking about morality or sex or something like that, you start getting that feeling that like we're out here clashing on branches, but the disagreement is fundamental, but it's way deeper down the trunk. The thing that we've split off from, I mean, it's there's something, you know, and maybe you go back far enough, you might not be able to get back to an agreement on a level where you could come together and then come back and find some kind of agreement on these farther ramifications, but at least you could maybe kind of understand something. And you know, this got to mind that my friend Leo that founded Breadbox Media that you're listening to right now, he put something on his Facebook page, and I was telling him that one of my professors, Dr. Richard Ferrier, please pray for my friend Dr. Ferrier. He's going to have a pretty ugly surgery here pretty soon, and he's the single most beautiful, well-educated man on planet Earth. I love him to pieces. He told me one time that one of the things that he was most grateful for in his intellectual life was his time he spent as an actor. Because he learned how to try someone on, so to speak, to put a person on, to kind of think about why would they think like that? What would be their motivation in that? Why would they approach that question or that statement in that way? And to try to try these on. And he said that he did that when he would read these different great books. Why the hell would Nietzsche say that? Why would he think that that's, why would he look at the same reality I'm looking at and come up with that this is the dichotomy that we need to break things down? And why would he think like that? You know, why would he, you know? And I think that we've reached a point in our society where we are so demarcated that anytime you get someone who's a hardcore Trump guy and a hardcore Bernie person or something, and they're both, you know, and they try to have a cup of coffee and have a conversation, they're not too far off from, you know, some American philologist and a seven-legged alien behind a screen squirting ink at a window or something. I mean, it's not that different. They're really speaking different languages that are talking about very different portrayals of the world and different experiences of the world. Now, here's what's interesting is that it's how your language affects how you view the world. Because in the end, when she really, really learned that language and experienced the experience that gave them that language, she saw the world they did. And now in the science fiction-y thing, she got outside where she could kind of see glimpses of the future and see the future. And she was kind of had an almost eternity-based relationship to time. And that happened from learning the language. Now, that's obviously science fiction and a little far-fetched, but I think there's something beautiful and symbolic there. So anyway, Arrival, really worth going to. All right, I ran out of time to talk about the application of ideas that we get from reading books and some stuff about Wendell Berry that I wanted to talk about maybe next time. All right, let's pull the plug, pop the cork on another episode of Counterposition.
I take your place, marble stone. I take your place, marble stone.